We've gotten used to thinking about wolves in abbreviations. It started with OR7, the collared gray wolf from Oregon who was tracked wandering all over the region on both sides of the state line years ago. He eventually settled in Jackson County and fathered what became known as the Rogue Pack. It's another collared wolf, OR85, drawing attention on the California side. He appears to have found a mate and settled in Siskiyou County. That couple is referred to as the Whaleback Pair. Let's catch up on wolf conservation in California. Kent Lawden is a wolf specialist for California Fish and Wildlife based in Redding and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Kent, welcome.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
Sure. Are you a crew of one at this point? Is anybody else working with wolves in California?
I am a crew of one for regular, everyday wolf management on the ground, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so it's certainly a growing industry, but growing slowly. What at this point, what do we know about the number of wolves in the state of California?
Well, we have that pair that you mentioned, the Whaleback Pair, and then we have the Lassen Pack, which is the second pack to have occurred in California. Their first summer of reproduction was 2017, and they've produced pups ever since then. There's about six wolves in that pack, together with the pair and another wolf, OR93, that is way far south down in Southern California. In last location was San Luis Obispo County, believe it or not.
Those wolves do get around, don't they?
And then you'd expect that there's some small number of other dispersers in the state that are not radio collared.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The ones we hear about are tagged in Oregon, but have you done some capturing and collaring of your own in California?
Yes. Yeah, so we've captured and collared several wolves in the Lassen Pack.
Mm-hmm. And so how many do you have with, and I noticed their prefixes are LAS for Lassen.
Right. So far, I think I've captured four wolves in that pack, and there is one functioning radio collar in there right now. Obviously, radio collars, the batteries die after a period, and wolves disperse. So one of those collars has actually gone the other way, to Oregon.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah. So dispersing from the Lassen Pack into Oregon.
Yeah, so LAS 13M, a male, he began to disperse from the pack last year in August, and by October entered Oregon.
Wow, okay, so that's impressive that they do move in two directions. I guess that's to be expected. Now, has anything changed in OR85's story over the last 2 months? Does it still look like he's settling down?
Yeah, he's doing pretty routine things on a winter range in what looks like his new home range in Siskiyou County. So the winter range portion, of course, is where the deer are this time of the year. And that looks a lot like Valley Bottom by night. And it's a lot of private property and agriculture rancher interests. And then up in the timber, up in the hills and mountains by day, sleeping.
Hmm. All right. So, and why is OR85 and the wolf that appears to be his mate referred to as the Whaleback Pair?
There is a mountain simply called the Whaleback, not Whaleback Mountain or Whaleback Peak, but the Whaleback. And, yeah, prominently in the middle of that new home range. If you look at it from the side, if you have a creative imagination, it looks like the back of a breaching whale.
And that's about where OR85 was spotted?
That is in the middle of his very large home range. Right now I've got it measured at 480 square miles.
Wow. Wolves do get around, don't they?
Yes, they do. They're built, if you look at them, they have the long legs. They're built to move. That's how they hunt. So they're very capable of long-distance travel within their home range. That's what they need to do, is have large home ranges, and they're able to do that for a chance encounter with prey And basically it goes, you see prey, you test, it works or it doesn't, and you go on to the next one. And so if you think about it that way, you really need the ability to put on a lot of miles per night. And then, of course, that transfers with the dispersing wolves that leave their pack to find another place to live, to find a mate. And then, of course, they're capable of hundreds and even thousands of square miles of traveling.
Kent Lawden is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a wolf specialist for California Fish and Wildlife based in Redding. We're catching up on wolf movements in Northern California. And as you've heard already, there's even some in Southern California. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Your questions, comments are welcome here at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So is there a pretty standard response now, Kent, to when you know that there's a wolf in California, things you do to confirm the presence, look for further evidence of habitation?
Yeah, so obviously Northern California, or really any place that wolves live, they occupy because of those large home ranges. And then if you think about a population, you need a much larger area than that. And so really Northern California and other places are impossibly huge landscapes. So one of the things that really helps a lot is public reporting. We don't have radio collars. People see things, they see wolves or tracks or hear howling or whatever, and they report it, to the state agencies. In this case, like most states, wolf states have a public reporting system online. We look for patterns in that, and that with, of course, our own efforts on the ground, we begin to get some idea that there may be some activity in an area, and then we follow up on it. The radio collars are easy. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, the non-radio collared ones, like the Lassen pack, when they started, both of those pairs were, or that pair was uncollared, and like the old Shasta pack was uncollared too. Mm-hmm. And you get reports followed up on them, and you just go through the process to learn more and eventually get collars in them. Once you get that collar in the pack, then you begin to learn a lot more about their home range. And then, of course, monitoring after that for population numbers, reproduction, mortality, whatever, becomes a lot more resolute.
So do you have to collect specimens and things the wolves leave behind to confirm presence?
Good point, yes. So these days, well, there's a few good things or interesting things these days that really help us out a lot. Compared to the old days when I first started doing this 24 years ago in Idaho, we have those satellite collars. In the old days, we had to physically go out and find the wolf through a radio signal. These days, as you're alluding to, we also have genetics that can help us out a lot. With hair and poop, and does this poop belong to a wolf or a coyote, for instance? And then if it does belong to a wolf, then, you know, we can even determine through a number of samples, do we have a pair here or more? Where are they from? We can take that to University of Idaho and compare it to their library. So for instance, we may get a result, oh, look, this animal in Northern California is from the Amnaha pack in northeastern Oregon. It has relationships there. And also trail cams, too. So those three things are all things that we did not have in, you know, what I call the old days, 20-some years ago.
Right, yeah, well, a lot of change in technology since that time. You mentioned briefly that the old Shasta pack, which we don't mention anymore. What happened to the Shasta pack?
We don't know. They weren't radio collared, and they were on the landscape for a very brief amount of time. So radio collaring just wasn't possible during that short amount of time, especially because it was so new to the state of California. It was around the time that they were just, people preceding me were just then gearing up on how to do all of that, how to capture wolves And ordering radio collars with that kind of technology takes a lot of time. And so it just didn't happen. Without radio collars, it becomes very difficult. There's a number of things that can lead to wolves disappearing like that. Obviously, a main reason is mortality. And then we know from the past that mortality, even if just one of the pair dies, and wolves die of all kinds of reasons, of course, that pack can fragment and starburst. We do know that, I call it starburst, where they just kind of go off in different directions. One of the pups, through genetics, somebody saw it in Nevada and was able to determine from a wolf scat that it was from a pup from the Shasta pack. So it's really tough to say, but probably, you know, some kind of mortality is probably in there somewhere.
Kent, is there any way of knowing how many uncollared wolves there may be for everyone with a collar? Do you have a suspicion anyway?
Boy, that's a good question. There's not a way of knowing. Is there a way of guessing? I guess maybe the better way to put that. Oregon tells me that about 85 to 90% of their population is not collared. So most of that population exists in northeastern Oregon. So the way I look at it, then, what proportion of that number goes south and goes south that far? It is kind of, you know, doing some math on some unknowns there.
Right.
But, you know, you have to think that there's, you know, some small number of wolves that are part of that population. However, obviously, dispersing wolves that travel thousands of miles are impossible to monitor, even if you could detect them at one point in time. Here it is. That's a wolf, verified wolf. Virtually the next day, you know nothing about them.
They oh, sure.
Be in Nevada, back in Oregon, or dead.
Is there any rhyme or reason? I mean, obviously, we've gotten used to the idea of how far they'll travel, and you just mentioned one getting as far south as San Luis Obispo. I mean, but is there any predictability to their movements at all?
No. Some people, I think, recently have suggested, I've been reading in the newspapers, that they pick a direction and they stick to it. I haven't found that to be true. They move in all different directions. They may travel south for a long ways and then hang out in an area for a while and then travel north for a long ways. And then east and west, there doesn't really seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. This particular wolf, OR93, in Southern California seems to be a really big exception to that, where it looked like he did pick a direction and he stuck with it.
Kent Lawton is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a wolf specialist with California Department of Fish and Wildlife based in Redding, pretty much a solo crew at this point in California as wolves are just getting established there. Questions and comments for Kent are welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Got one question dropped off by phone, no name attached, wants to know if this is the same species of wolf being reintroduced. Are these gray wolves just like the ones we used to have? Because the caller says there are rumors that these wolves are bigger than the previous species.
Oh, yeah. That's been an age-old insertion from that part of the conversation that doesn't really care for wolves too much. Yes, of course it is. If you can think about it, there were no big barriers that existed in the past, so there was genetic flow throughout the Rocky Mountains and parts beyond that. We do find some differences in subspecies historically across the United States. But you can imagine that those lines of differences, don't really exist on the ground, right? You can't say it wouldn't make any sense for across the street, across the river is a different kind of a wolf. you know, the Wolves swim rivers,
mm-hmm.
and very large barriers, of which there's really none throughout the western U.S. So there had to have been genetic flow through all of that. We don't really see any kind of strong differences with museum samples or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to go very, very far north and south. Like if you go to the extreme parts of Alaska down to the Mexican wolf is where you start to see some differences.
Okay.
The Mexican wolf is very small compared to northern Rocky wolves and compared to the Mackenzie wolf in Alaska.
All right, but gray wolves are gray wolves, and you're not seeing a lot of difference from what was there historically. Okay, I'm not surprised to hear that.
Go ahead.
Not surprised to hear that you'd heard about that that same rumor.
No, it's been going on with a number of other rumors and misinformation about wolves.
So in addition to your searches for wolves and evidence of wolves, Kent, I mean, I imagine a fair amount of time is spent with ranchers and other people who have an interest in protecting their property, their livestock from wolves.
Yes. So obviously very important folks on the ground. And you can imagine, just like the rest of us, that doing what we can all do to support our livelihoods and make sure that we're successful in it. In the case of ranchers, you know, essentially running their own business that have a complex set of variables that they have to manage, the wolf becomes another one of those variables of which they don't really have any previous information, other than what you read in the newspapers. And, of course, the only time wolves make the paper is when it's bad news. So really try to work with those folks before they get their own, experience with them to share what I know about, in this case, often cattle-wolf interactions and lots of communication and trust relationships so that we can work together to maybe come up with some creative solutions to deter conflict to the extent possible. You can't shut it off entirely, but hopefully you can reduce it. And there is almost daily communication with that with folks on the ground.
It seems like that many steps have been taken, and I know we've talked on the program about the range of things attempted, from everything from the air dancer things, from the car lots, to training the cattle how to circle themselves when there's a wolf around. I mean, it's got to be pretty much an endless list of things that have been attempted.
There's been a number of things that have been tried, and every once in a while we plateau. It's hard to tell when the next good idea to try comes around, but it is a difficult thing. You can't turn it off. You hope that you can deter it. I think phylagery seems to work the best some places, but it only has small acreage application. You can imagine very large allotments don't really work well for phylagery, which is, you know, the electrified rope with red flagging on it. So it is a difficult thing. Fortunately, the amazing thing is that wolves that live in livestock, and literally that's the case throughout the western U.S., it's very common that wolves, for instance, rear their pups right in the middle of a grazing allotment, and they're moving through cattle every single night. And on a minority of those nights, they kill livestock. And that's a very interesting thing, and it's a hopeful thing, too. That it doesn't happen more often is puzzling, but that's good. And so if we can figure that out more through science, and there's a number of people that are interested in it, it just becomes a difficult thing to measure. How can we capitalize on what's already there to help, if you will, wolves make good decisions?
Kent Lund, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange from California Fish and Wildlife. We're talking about wolves here on the Jefferson Exchange. That really is interesting. So there's a lot more proximity of wolves to cattle than perhaps we realize, and more often than not, there's no direct interaction.
Yeah, super common. And I don't mean to, you know, decrease the fact, too, that occasionally it does occur that wolves become very habitual and chronic cattle killers. That does occur.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes less so than the majority of time.
So,
and so one of the things that we become interested in then, what can we do to deter that conflict, to reduce the chance of that happening, the chronic behavior? And the thought there is that through time, certain individuals of wolves become skilled at handling a very large herd animal. And maybe that's a deterrent to begin with.
Yeah.
Cows are big, and especially when you have cow-calf operations and all of those hormones that make moms into being a good mom, adult cows can be pretty aggressive, especially in the herd applications. You can imagine a few wolves, three or four wolves, go into a pasture. They'll be met by 20 cows.
Mm-hmm.
That be quite intimidating, and wolves will leave. I think that's what happens often.
Interesting. So we're almost have to go here, Kent. So I guess the final question then is, I know there have been some collared wolves found dead in Northern California, at least one shot. Are those cases still under investigation?
Oh, that's Northern California. You'd have to talk to those folks about it. I don't have any idea.
Oh, interesting. Okay. But and there are penalties, though. I mean, wolves are still protected in California, correct?
In California, they are still protected under California State Endangered Species Act.
All righty. Well,
and I'm sorry, you were asking about the wolves up in Northern Oregon, right?
No, California.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah. Those are under investigation still. Yep.
Okay. All right. Thanks for cleaning that up for us. Kent Lawden, wolf specialist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, based in Redding, an army of one at this point in wolf conservation. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the Jefferson Exchange.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
All right. Take it easy.